Grant, how's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I just got to Milwaukee, so that's fun.
Oh, nice. How was the flight from DC? I assume,
Oh yeah. Horrible Wi-Fi, but it's all
right?
good. Yeah,
Yeah, no, glad you're there. I guess you got a day tomorrow to just take it easy, right?
explore whatever there is in Milwaukee for sure.
Yeah, I've never been there before, so not too familiar with their game.
Well, I'll we'll have to do another conversation. I'll let you know.
Yeah, for sure, man.
What's going on, fellas?
Vinay, what's up, man?
Pretty good, pretty good. Oh,
Live
wow,
and
we got some
direct
people
from
rolling in
India.
here already.
I know, yeah,
Live
we got
and
a nice.
direct from India. It is 9:31 a.m. here. So we're
Damn.
rolling. Yes, sir. Happy Friday to me. Happy Thursday night to y'all.
Happy
Sorry, Friday.
Friday
I'm
to you.
sorry.
No, it's fine. Thursday's my favorite day of the week, so I appreciate it.
Let's go ahead and get started. Grant, thanks for joining us again. Really quick, thank you for posting that video on your YouTube thing of Luka, because I know that quote went viral the other day and we didn't really see video of it. So thanks for posting that on your YouTube channel.
Oh yeah, for sure. I feel like it's good to kind of have, whether it's like the locker room, like the rare times it is, or the post game press conference stuff. I feel like it's good to have it like consistently available in case something like that definitely pops up for sure.
Yeah, because that was a locker room availability. I guess it wasn't a press conference, so they didn't upload it. So yeah, crucial and clutch that you were there. First question I have to ask you though, did you go to Bourbon Street in between the Pelicans games, and did you see Luka there?
No, I didn't. I usually stay pretty busy myself with watching the like rewatching stuff and trying to record stuff too. So I did not, but yeah.
Let's start with the negatives real quick, because that game was. I mean, I didn't watch it live. I had to rewatch it. Unfortunately, wasted 3 hours of my vacation here in India watching it. I'll start with you, Grant. What did you take away from that game? Is that like a sign of concern or a red flag, I guess, going forward that they, I mean, looked that bad in a game that, I mean, I think they're a better team than the Pelicans. Like, what did you take away from that?
I thought the Pelicans had really good initial defensive strategies. I felt like having Herb Jones back and putting him on Derek Lively to switch and ball screen actions, I felt like that disrupted things. And the Mavs ended up seeing something relatively similar with like less talented players the following game against the Wizards. But they kind of seeing that different style allowed them to basically kind of digest it and then be prepared more for it when they played the Wizards. And sometimes that just happens. Like the opposition has like a really good strategy. They have the personnel to execute it. And that's why it's like a chess match, a game within the game sort of thing. So I think that was my main takeaway, just how disruptive Herb Jones can be as a defender. And then kind of a tip your cap sort of I guess you could say thing for the Pelicans, especially without having their head coach. Thought that was a pretty interesting thing with James Borrego as the like kind of fill-in coach.
Jay, what did you take away from that rough one on Wednesday?
I always like to say this because it's true, and it's just that like it's very difficult to beat the same team two times in a row, especially on the road. And so it didn't shock me necessarily that the Mavs lost that game, but the fashion in which they lost the game was definitely pretty dispiriting. But I guess you could chalk it up to, they just maybe weren't ready. They weren't prepared. And of course, like Grant said, I think Herb Jones really made a difference for the Pelicans in that game, and the Mavericks didn't seem to be ready for it for whatever reason. But New Orleans has always been a place where weird things have happened for the Mavericks, so that was just kind of one of those games for them. But glad they were able to right the ship against Washington.
Was that game on Wednesday or Tuesday? Honestly, my days are so messed up in my head.
It was on Tuesday. It was an in-season tournament game.
Okay.
High
Okay, well,
stakes.
I knew that. And then
It means more.
on that topic, Grant, I want to ask you. I don't know if you got to walk the court on Wednesday, but did you get to walk the court? Like walk on the court? Did you notice anything like weird with the floor, like slippage wise?
I did get to walk the floor, but no, I didn't personally notice anything. Mostly because I feel like, you know, like with those guys, like actually like kind of moving on the court, it's probably definitely different. But I just remember like Luka's very aware of those sort of things. Like I remember being in FIBA like World Cup, and they had those like obnoxious stickers around like the nail area, like where the free throw line is. And he was like pretty like, hey, let's get this thing checked out, like at shoot around for one of those games. So I feel like, you know, for someone who really like decelerates and stuff in the paint a lot, you got to have really good traction. So I feel like that's the type of thing that he would definitely notice. But yeah, I definitely did not notice.
Damn, that's a good tip. We're going to have to clip that, Jay. Get on that after the episode. I did not know that about the FIBA tournament. That's a good little tip.
I just want one quick thing on that note, because like I don't know if this is the exact reason, but I mean, you guys obviously remember back in the day when the NBA used to put the Larry O'Brien trophy at center court for the finals, right? But they removed it. And I think one of the reasons that's been given was because players complained about slipping on it. But then, you know, it appears that some of these like colored courts are just the full court is that type of material. Like it's not like it's painted. It's kind of wrapped in something, and Luka complained about the court being a little bit slippery.
I think the first courts, you know? The Pacers complained a lot about it as well, like in their game. So I think it's definitely been an issue in different cities.
Yeah,
I don't want to go too long on the courts. I think the courts are an absolutely horrible idea. I don't know why they did it so last second of the season. I really would honestly, I doubt that they even got the players okay on doing it. So I don't really know.
I think I heard literally not one player say they like the colors. Like I've heard like 10 players talk about it, and they've all like, yeah, disliked it. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I mean the NBA, like, I mean, I feel like they market themselves compared to the NFL, especially as being like a players first league, and to not have the players' approval on that is just like beyond ridiculous to me. I know people kind of freaked out about Luka saying that after the game, but I mean, if it's an issue about dribbling the ball or slippage, or like he doesn't feel good about his traction when he decelerates a lot, like it's a huge part of his game. Like that's not the only reason he played poorly on Tuesday. I'm not excusing that, but I mean, it is definitely a factor. But let's get to the positives and not talk about Adam Silver's BS little on-court gimmick. Last night versus the Wizards. Takeaways from that game for y'all. I know the Wizards are probably the worst team in the NBA, but just quick little takeaway from you, Grant, and then after that, you go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I think overall I was really impressed kind of with the general stuff that, you know, you saw, like Tim Hardaway Jr., he played really effectively. I thought he provided a big spark with Kyrie Irving being out, you know, just being able to rely on him to kind of fill some of the void and some of their half-court actions. He, you know, scored like 6 points off of like handoff, stuff like that, like adds up when you don't have, you know, a player like Kyrie to kind of run the normal, like, high ball screen, like, ISO stuff. And, you know, I thought Derek Lively was very impressive. And I think, you know, as you said, with the Wizards being a, you know, like, lower-level competition type of team, you know, having a rookie big man who's 19 be able to raise the floor of a defense with his, like, rim deterrence and just general versatility, along with his, you know, presence as a rim roller, I thought was very interesting. And then kind of the back to the point of the Pelicans pick and roll defense, like the similarities that I saw, I thought it was interesting just seeing the game within the game where, you know, the Mavericks kind of faced that similar strategy where Kyle Kuzma was often the one, you know, guarding, you know, Derek Lively initially to switch so they could have, you know, Daniel Gafford basically be, you know, an early low man rotated over to the paint off of Derek Jones and kind of dare him to shoot. And, you know, I thought it was great that, you know, Derek Jones converted from three early on and then was a, you know, effective perimeter play finisher overall to get his 20 points, whether it was like redrives or cutting, things like that. And, you know, just basically like as that game kind of developed, it was fascinating to see the Mavs kind of go into stock pick and roll to kind of bring Grant Williams' man, like Jordan Poole, into the action to kind of force that that mismatch. They played out of some, you know, interesting, you know, like slip, like you know, ball screen actions out of that where, you know, they knew that slip was going to come and there'd be a window to get the ball to Grant Williams. And then he made a couple drop-off passes to Derek Lively. You know, just having that, you know, baseline option in the dunker spot to be able to just kind of dump the ball to out of the short roles very very helpful, and they haven't had in recent years. And then it was kind of interesting after those kind of, I guess you could say, scheme breaking sequences in the third quarter. The Wizards kind of went to more of just a traditional high ball screen, like pick and roll coverage. And that's not something you really see often, where like the team kind of just says these other schemes that we try to attempt got broken, so we're just going to do like regular pick and roll coverage. But the Mavs really picked that apart, because that's ideally what they would want to see with like a rim roller like Lively and playmaker like Luka. And that's really when things heated up for Lively. He really punished them on that. And I just think overall that game within the game was interesting. It really elevated, like having a big man like him elevated the team on both sides. And that's exactly what you want to see when you play like losing teams.
Jay, I don't know how you're going to follow that up. Probably not going to sound as smart as that.
Definitely not. I mean, I think Grant covered most of it. But I mean, for me, the big takeaway was, one, the Mavericks hadn't beaten the Wizards in over two calendar years. So I think, first off, that was nice to see. It was also nice to see that they didn't get killed by Kyle Kuzma, because Kuzma had played really well against the Mavs in the last few matchups. I think he was, extra motivated going against Spencer Dinwiddie. Like Grant said, I think Derek Lively really, showcased his abilities on both ends of the floor, especially defensively. I thought he had maybe his best game of the season. It was very difficult for the Wizards in the paint. He was truly looked like, he looked like Rudy Gobert out there in that sense. And obviously it's against the Wizards, so take it with a grain of salt, but I think you really got to see his potential as a rim protector. His ability to, get a block on one end, run the floor, and, collect the lob pass from Luka, I thought that was great. And I love to see that Luka found Lively for two or three, lobs. I think their chemistry developing is going to open up the offense even more. And then, Tim Hardaway Jr. had his best game of the season again. Like, he's just been so reliable for the Mavericks up until this point. All in all, it was a great night. They won without Kyrie Irving, and they got 2 days off before playing Milwaukee, which is going to be a huge game. So, needed that one.
Yeah, a win's a win. You rack up all these wins. The West is going to be, I think, competitive. And, yeah, all these games matter. I wanted to touch real quick on a point Grant made about, these wings being on Lively. I think a couple years ago, some Mavs fans were wondering why KP was stuck in a corner when the Clippers put Kawhi on him in a playoff series. And that's just because, like, you put a wing like that, like, it's just easier for the team to switch a wing onto Luka. They'd rather have that than have a big onto Luka. So I'm glad you brought that up. It's going to be kind of interesting to see how teams play that the rest of the year, because if you play normal pick and roll coverage, like you said, Grant, like, you got no chance against Luka. Like, your best chance is honestly to switch, because he makes the right play 9 out of 10 times on those pick and roll plays. Going back to negatives, Josh Green, I think uncomfortable conversations need to be had about Josh Green. Grant, what have you seen from Josh Green this year? I don't know. Just talk me off the ledge with Josh Green.
Yeah, I think the big thing for him, I think, is, catch and shoot jumper. It starts there. I think it hasn't been consistent, especially in the last, like, recent games. I think he's not converted. I don't know the exact numbers. I actually have to check, to be honest, but it's been a, like a low percentage. And, for someone who's in a low usage role, who's kind of primarily going to be spotting up, that's, usually going to be a very limiting factor in your overall ability to produce points. I do think that there's been times, I think kind of earlier in the season, I know it's like still like 12 games, so to say earlier in the season is kind of dumb, but like the initial games, I felt like there was more focus to get him in some of those actions, like zoom actions, handoffs to get, like, turn the corner, get downhill, kind of put him in pin down actions as well. And I felt like he kind of got stuck sometimes where he felt like he had to make a play that wasn't there. Like, oftentimes the defense would kind of stay home and he would be left where he had to kind of make a play through contact or like a tough short range sort of shot, like just pull up and make a play. And he kind of was deterred from that and left his feet sometimes without anywhere to go with the ball and kind of overpassed it and had some turnovers. I think there's some indecision in those situations. And that's an area that I felt like he would need to grow overall, or you would like to see grow entering the season. Because he does have a lot of explosiveness, getting him the ball in those situations. He should be able to get to the rim. If it's not there, you'd ideally like to see him start to take those pull-ups in short range, or at least play through contact more. And that would be a good starting place, because I don't think physically a lot of players could probably handle him if he did get more aggressive in those situations. Just my personal thought, but you know, I think that would open things up for him. But in general, I think if a lot of things do rely on the catch and shoot three falling statistically for him, if it doesn't, there's not too many opportunities to kind of overcompensate for that. So that would probably be the step one. And then step two is just make the most of those half court actions when he's utilized in them.
Jay, Josh Green thoughts, positive or probably negative?
I mean, you know, I thought he had a good preseason and he showed a lot of what Grant was talking about, like the, you know, the ability to do the one or two dribble pull up, you know, or drive to the basket and finish. But for whatever reason, after signing the extension, and obviously I'm not saying that it's because he got his money, but, you know, that's also when the season started. But he just hasn't, you know, like you said, the catch and shoot three hasn't fallen quite at the rate that we're used to seeing it. I mean, even though his percentage might be, you know, might still be pretty good. But like last night, 36 minutes, and he went scoreless, obviously, but the most surprising thing was four shot attempts. Like, I feel like you got to get up more shots than that. But even then, like defensively too, I feel like he's getting lost in screens a lot more than he did on the pass. He just looks way more out of control. So, I mean, I wonder if something is going on with him that we don't know about, but hopefully, you know, he's able to stabilize and the game slows down for him, because I really did like the way that he was progressing, you know, even into the preseason of this year.
Yeah, I forgot who said it, but I feel like a somewhat big-time Mavs reporter said that the Mavericks were kind of worried about, you know, how Josh Green was going to feel, like kind of having his contract up and not being secured long-term. Now I'm starting to think that he's thinking too much and trying to play up to that contract, because, I mean, he's been sure of himself in the past, but, I mean, this season, man, he just looks even more unsure of him. Of himself than he's ever been before, and that's just like not what you want to see in year four of it. I mean, this is a big year for him and he's just not showing it at all. And this kind of leads into my next question. I kind of think Omax has, I don't think the Mavericks intended on putting Omax into the rotation kind of this soon into the season, but I think because of Josh Green's play this year, they've kind of forced themselves into doing so. What do y'all kind of want to see from Omax going forward, and what are your kind of expectations in the near future and then maybe towards the end of the season with Omax?
I think my general impression right now is that I think more so because of Maxi Kleba being hurt, I think that's a big factor of why he's getting the minutes. I remember Jason Kidd mentioning that, I think, like at a practice, like kind of around the time when Maxi got hurt, saying that there could be more opportunities for Omax as a result. But I do think overall with him, I think, you know, like kind of similar to what we said with the Josh Green comments, I think, you know, consistent catch and shoot results would definitely be, you know, a starting place. That's what you would want any like sort of floor spacing perimeter player around Luka and Kyrie and just in general. But I do think, you know, seeing him be under control when he attacks closeouts would be a very, you know, intriguing thing as well, because, you know, he likes to attack downhill and play off of 2 feet with a shot fake. But not overdoing that, like predetermining it, would be, you know, a good thing. You know, I talked to him after his game in Frisco, and he did talk about how he's kind of studying the nuances of how he needs to basically attack defenses, like be that sort of like the Derrick Jones situation that we were talking about earlier as well, where he's that perimeter play finisher, whether it's catch and shoot threes, knocking those down, or he's making reads on well-timed cuts or redriving, basically doing all of those things that you see Derrick Jones doing now are things that, you know, relatively similar to what Omax is, you know, studying and focusing on. So I think, you know, all those areas would probably be a good starting place, because, you know, usually don't put, you know, like a developing player who's in a rookie year into too many actions or anything of that nature. To make, you know, playmaking decisions. So I think all those sort of play finishing reads would definitely be a good starting place from him. And then handling tougher defensive assignments with the switching, not fouling, things like that. Like anything you'd like to see from a typical, you know, young wing defender, I think you would like to see from him as well.
Oh, my turn. It's kind of hard. Kind of hard to follow that up. I think Grant covered most of it. But, you know, I think that we're seeing Omax get a little bit more minutes in the rotation. And last night, like, he got in the game in the second quarter, which I thought was nice to see. And, you know, his three-pointer still hasn't fallen yet. Like, you know, we see him take the shots every now and then when he's open during games. And I like that he's not scared. But and so that'll fall eventually. I think the shot was always something that was going to need work from him. I do like his ability to attack closeouts and generate free throws. He had one instance last night where he did that. He just missed both free throws. But I think that sort of process is good to see out of him because, you know, a lot of people like to compare him to Dorian Finney-Smith. But I think, like, that aspect of his game is far ahead of where Dorian Finney-Smith was at this stage of his career, the ability to attack closeouts. So, you know, I think if he can keep doing that and stay aggressive, that's really what's going to get him more minutes. And if he can start hitting the three, I think he can really be a mainstay in the rotation, kind of how like Jaden Hardy came along last year. But at the same time, don't want to put too high expectations on him in year one.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised that he's getting even the minutes that he's gotten the last few games. I know Jason Kidd said he wanted to work him into the rotation more. We'll see how that pans out in games that, I mean, next few games, the back-to-back against the Bucks and the Kings, two teams that made the playoffs last year, two teams that are going to make the playoffs this year, I think. So it'll be interesting to see how he kind of plays with those minutes with Omax, Josh Green, Exum, all those guys. Next question, Derrick Jones Jr., Grant. Really impressed by what I've seen from him this year. He's on a veteran minimum contract, and he's been starting every game this year. And, you know, I think at the beginning of the year, we were kind of, you know, skeptical about how he would do in that role. But what have you seen from Derrick Jones, and is this sustainable, what he's done so far?
Yeah, I think the big thing for him has always been consistency on catch and shoot attempts. I think, you know, he's had some situations, especially in the last couple of games, even though he's already shot efficiently, that teams – the poison that they're picking, if you want to call it like that, when you're saying you're picking your poison when guarding an offense, is to kind of initially leave him open and dare him to shoot and make you pay. And, you know, he's done that, you know, and especially against the Wizards, he was 2 for 5, I believe, if I remember correctly. So I think, you know, more often than not, he's been able to do that. He mentioned, you know, before the season when I kind of asked him about his shooting mechanics and things that went into his career year last year, shooting 34%. He kind of, you know, said that he's just always been confident in his shot, and, you know, this is a year that he wants to kind of take advantage of it, playing next to, like, the type of talent that he's got with Luka and Kyrie. So I think he's kind of just getting it done. You know, he doesn't really have a lot of, like, detailed, like, words, but, you know, like, it's, I can respect it. You know, he's just like, you know, I've always been confident and I'm gonna get it done. All right, well, he's getting it done so far, so I've been impressed with that. You know, just a lot of the little things that he always has to his game that get opened up by being a consistent three-point shooter, like the ability to, you know, redrive. He has a couple of recent plays where, you know, whether it's Luka or mostly Luka, but, you know, whether it's Luka or Kyrie, kind of getting downhill and making the spray-out pass, the ball pops around and finds, you know, Derrick Jones. He's been able to kind of attack downhill and play through contact, either, you know, finishing for an and-one or just getting to the free throw line. That's stuff that you like to have in a spot-up player that's spacing the floor because, you know, there's been situations in recent years where the Mavs, you know, they've kind of had two one-dimensional players, I would say, for ideal circumstances in, like, those previous rosters where it's a lot of reliance on threes and not really that sort of alternative, like, layer to kind of attack, you know, like, those closeouts like that. And then, you know, the cutting is a big thing as well because there's really not many players that are going to bring the tangibles he has. He's 6'6", extremely explosive, and he's got a 7-foot wingspan. So it doesn't take him long to launch off the floor, kind of like how Derek Lively is at the 5, where it's like, you know, if you get, like, late on a rotation or he just takes advantage of, you know, like, a breakdown, it's very hard to recover against that. And, you know, his transition leakouts, that's always something that's impressive with, you know, how athletic he is as well, too. And I think all that offensive stuff is great as well, but, like, the, you know, ability to guard tough assignments, that's something that they needed and have the length to disrupt them and the quickness to do so as well. And, you know, that just goes a long way when it's all in one player. And, you know, just as long as the catch and shoot three stays consistent, that goes a long way overall.
Yeah, you know, I think, like, obviously the jump shot, like the three-pointer, has been something that's really impressed me from Derrick Jones. And I felt like he had it in him this year, especially in this system. It simplifies everyone's roles. And, you know, you see at the beginning of the game, Derrick Jones Jr.'s role is basically to stand in the corner and either take the shot when open or make the cut, like Grant said. But as the game goes on, you see him expanding his offensive repertoire a little bit more, whether it's putting the ball on the floor, attacking closeouts, and that's been something that I didn't know he had in his game quite at the level that he's shown, especially against Washington last night. I thought he was very under control putting the ball on the floor and going up and finishing. Like, when he goes up for a layup, I feel good about it. I don't feel as good about guys like Josh Green doing it, but Derrick Jones Jr. has the right technique when it comes to putting the ball on the floor and finishing. And then also, you know, you see him sometimes set quick screens for the ball handler, and we've seen Kyrie Irving find him in the pocket pass for the dunk in the pick and roll, and that's something I used to do with him in 2K. So it's kind of crazy to see it happen in real life, because it's almost a play you would expect a big man to set. But with the wingspan that Derrick Jones Jr. has and the athleticism that he has, he can almost play like that in the half court. And then, you know, one thing that's also really impressed me about him is just like what his wingspan does in terms of allowing him to get long rebounds, I think has been critical for the Mavericks, who are one of the, you know, bottom teams in the league in rebounding. It helps them corral a few more rebounds per game that they would have let go last year. So, you know, all that kind of adds up and makes a difference. And that's why you see the Mavericks getting off to this 9-3 start, as opposed to maybe like a, you know, 7-5 start, something like that. So that's kind of my answer on Derrick Jones.
You cut out there, you stopped speaking. I don't know which one. But I'm going to thank you guys for the Derrick Jones points. I've been a huge fan of Derrick Jones this year. I don't know. I mean, the shooting numbers, especially, like, he's getting probably more – I don't have the numbers in front of me, but probably more wide-open looks this year than he ever has before. I mean, that's just what you kind of get with Luka. But especially, like, these are wide-open looks sometimes. Like, teams are basically daring him to shoot, like Grant was saying, kind of picking their poison. Speaking of Luka, wanted to bring this up. He's shooting better than he ever has this year, especially from three-point line. But his drives have gone down. Some quick numbers. This year, he's 12th in drives with 14.6 drives a game. Last year, he was 3rd in drives a game with 19.7 drives a game. So what have y'all kind of noticed with Luka's driving? Do you guys want to see him drive more? Why do you think he's not driving more? Kind of give me your thoughts overall on Luka's driving.
Yeah, I think part of it does have to do with in that first quarter, you have situations where the opposing team is daring Derrick Jones to shoot. So it is a little more, cramped as opposed to having like Reggie Bullock, Dorian Finney-Smith, like just complete four out, relying on the high ball screen ISO sort of stuff. And I feel like he's also maybe not just initiating as much, getting right into that stuff this season. So there's like less opportunities to necessarily get into that as he has in recent years. So I think that's probably the main stuff. I think because there's more possessions where, like, I know he still has a very high usage rate, but there's more possessions where, you know, he's kind of letting, you know, other players do their thing, getting into actions and kind of picking his spots as opposed to really, like, controlling as much, especially with them playing faster. I think that's a big part of it as well. Like, if he's making a throw-ahead pass that he wouldn't make with the play style last year, and because then, you know, the focus being to get up the floor and really kind of, you know, take advantage of easy scoring chances, that's not going to require as much of like the grinded out, like half court sort of like high ball screen ISO stuff. So I think that's probably the main thing. I think when the game slows down in the playoffs and things like that, you're going to need that. I don't think it really means too much, but, you know, I think as long as Derrick Jones continues to stay consistent from three, that should help it, I would say, over a more extended period of time, depending on how teams decide the game plan for that. But I do think it's a little different, too, when you have a rookie big man. The spacing's a little different. He still has to get used to all the little nuances of the game as well. Like, when you have, like, veteran big men, even, like, doing, like, Gortat screens on drives out of, like, pick and roll and stuff like that, that's extra ways to create scoring chances for the ball handler. That aren't necessarily going to be there if the big isn't doing things like that. So I think as Derek Lively continues to gain experience as well, he can kind of get some of those veteran techniques to create, like, I guess you could say, like space in his own way like that in the lane by kind of using positioning and things like that. So those are probably just the main general things for sure.
Yeah, I think, I'm always a proponent of getting shots at the rim, so from that perspective, it would be good to see Luka drive a little bit more. But at the same time, like, I think there's been two factors that have maybe you know, contributed to his drives being lower. Like, one has just been the success of the team overall shooting. You know, Luka's been shooting really well too, so it's clear he trusts his three-pointer, and we see him take a lot of shots from three, some of them which I wish he didn't take, but I mean, you live with it because it's Luka. But also, like, the success of Tim Hardaway Jr., Grant Williams, Derrick Jones Jr., like, all those guys have been productive shooting the ball, and they've been especially productive shooting the above-the-break threes, which, like Grant said, with the Mavs playing faster this year, those are a lot of the shots that they get, even Kyrie Irving for that matter, right? So the Mavs are taking a lot more shots earlier in the shot clock, which oftentimes are threes, and they've been hitting them. So I think from that perspective, it's like, why do you need to deviate from that? But like Grant said, you know, in the playoffs, when the game slows down and it becomes more focused in the half court, I think, you know, we obviously know what Luka can do, and hopefully because they're playing faster, he'll be fresher and, you know, in better shape to really dominate in those half court situations when the lights are brightest.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the pace has a little bit to do with it. The new rookie big man spacing, Derrick Jones and all that. I think all that are factors into Luka not driving as much and the shots going in more from the three-point line this year. So, you know, I don't think that's necessarily something to worry about. His post-ups are also down this year. I think last year they were at 4.4 and this year is at 2.6. And he's just not posting up as much. No, he's lost a little bit of weight, and that might not. Like, if you're bigger, it's easier to post up, I guess. But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily reasons to be concerned about or anything like that. Want to close with this, unless Jay, do you want to take over after this?
I think we've covered a decent amount. I know it's getting late for Grant too. I know we just got to Milwaukee, but yeah.
I guess really, yeah. Let's talk about Milwaukee real quick. Milwaukee and Sacramento is the back-to-back coming up. I guess what are y'all looking forward to tomorrow? Like, I guess matchups, kind of key things to watch for tomorrow versus the Bucks. Grant, you can go ahead and start.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize I was muted still. I think the main thing would probably just be the – honestly, just the surface-level stuff, just seeing, like, with the Bucks having Damian Lillard now, just seeing how the Mavs kind of handle that, and just how the Bucks continue to utilize those two stars, because there's a lot of potential if they involve them in direct actions together. Like how are you going to handle, you know, Damian Lillard's shooting range and then also account on the back end of your defense for, like, Giannis getting downhill. Those are very challenging, you know, attributes to account for in the half court, but I don't think the Bucks have really, like, fully utilized that as they kind of work things together. So just seeing what the Mavs' approach is to that will be intriguing. And, yeah, I think beyond that, just seeing, I think, probably internal stuff, you know, whether, you know, Kyrie Irving's available, how they continue to kind of find that or build that chemistry together as a unit. I guess you could say just a lot of the carryover stuff as well, like how impactful Derek Lively will be as a rim protector, avoiding foul trouble, things like that. I think a lot of it's probably internal beyond the game planning and execution against the top guys on the Bucks.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. I mean, obviously, like, anytime you go up against the biggest stars in the game, like Giannis and Damian Lillard, like, that's always an exciting matchup. And I think the Bucks are provide a unique challenge or a unique matchup for the Mavericks, just because, you know, they got these two stars, and historically they've been a pretty dominant defensive team. This year they're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. So can the Mavericks exploit that and, you know, really take advantage of the lacking of defense? Because I think, you know, the Mavs are going to have their hands full guarding the duo of Giannis and Damian. And then also the Bucks are going to be playing on the second night of a back-to-back in that game. I mean, Milwaukee's playing in Charlotte tomorrow night, and then they come back home on Saturday to play the Mavs. So the Mavs will actually have 2 days of rest on the Bucks. So can they use that to their advantage? And then, of course, like Sunday coming home in Dallas against Sacramento. Sacramento is obviously a team that provides, like, a pretty significant challenge on the second night of a back-to-back with how fast they play. But the Mavericks are actually fifth in the league in pace, and Sacramento, I checked last night, was 23rd. So technically the Mavericks play faster than Sacramento. So can the Mavericks sustain that intensity and energy over the course of a back-to-back against a Western Conference playoff team? And we've seen the Mavs start the season off 2-0 on the second night of a back-to-back. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get to 3-0 on Sunday.
Not to make your point look bad, but De'Aaron Fox didn't miss a lot of the season so far.
Yeah. I did tweet that caveat out, but should have mentioned it right now.
Okay,
too.
Cool. Sorry.
No, it's a good caveat.
But yeah, I appreciate you guys for joining me. I have to run right now, otherwise my extended family is going to kick my ass. So thank you guys for joining. Follow Grant at Grant Afseth on Twitter. Follow Jay at whatever his Twitter handle is, at JayApodG4. We will hopefully talk to y'all after the game tomorrow versus the Bucks.
Thanks, Grant. Thanks, Renee. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Yeah, thank you. I always enjoy talking to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you soon.